You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today our show will be Digital Crack, Social Media and Evolutionary Dangers. We're going to talk about social media and how it can leverage our evolutionary vulnerabilities to infiltrate into the crevices of our brain and take over our every action. In fact, if you're listening to us right now, you're not in control. We are.
We hypnotized.
Now we thought it was really interesting because there is so much impact. There's so much bombardment of information from social media. We can even just talk about media in general, whether it's YouTube or Instagram or TikTok.
Yeah.
What else? Facebook.
Twitter. X.
What was that place called? That old one called? Like home place or whatever. Things that don't exist anymore. But as we know, kids and adults and children are on their phones constantly. And we're going to talk about that.
Hours
a day. Yes, it is. Many hours a day. In fact, let's talk about some of the problems. Get it right off the bat. That recent developments on social media's impact on youth. Mental health warning issued over scrolling negative content online and joining social media row. That means arguments online. We'll talk about that. Number two, vapes, weed, grog. Social media has a lot to answer for, meaning it's helping promote drugs and vape, a culture to youth and young youth as well. And number three, the Times. Children order medicine on Snapchat, and then they're found dead. And this happens not just one time, but frequently. That drug use is being promoted, it's being influenced, it's making it accessible through these types of programs. And we're going to talk about how Snapchat, somebody, a drug dealer, can have an ad online like meet me at a club and I'll be selling these things and we can do a deal and it will be online, and as soon as they're shut down for that, they reopen. And in fact, I believe one of the studies we're going to reference, or one of the research things that we're going to reference, talks about 2.8 million times drug related content has been taken down, which is probably a tiny fraction of what's actually up there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's continue on with this. This is actually the bad part of the show. And I don't mean the bad part of the show, but we want to have the doom and the gloom out there. So if you are interested, you can share the doom and gloom. Here we go. That gloom and doom scroll mental health warning. People scrolling. This was a study done in London, research done in the UK. Mental health issues are surging, and this is only the UK. 3.8 million people seeking NHS, that's the hospital system in the UK. They sought that help last year, compared to 2.7 million in 2019. That's a great increase in people needing mental health help in London. Actually, in the UK. A study by the University College of London says that the internet is adding to people's woes, and a digital detox could help get them off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
A survey of 1,100 web users found their moods deteriorated after being shown negative content. However, the last point, when allowed to look at whatever they wanted later, those in a bad mood were likely to look for more misery.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're upset about something, they go and look right back at that thing that made them upset.
Yeah, because the algorithm can check in what is your like, you know? So you go where you go and then increase
Oh my gosh.
They're programmed to go to this way.
Do you know what the like does? So there are studies that show that when you see a like, mm-hmm. it releases dopamine in your brain. Every like you get mm-hmm. is a release, a little drop of dopamine, basically programming you like a little titration of drug dripping into your brain, seeking likes. We become like-seeking creatures.
Right? And it's looking for approval. So the human nature like to receive approval from others.
Yes, you're right. They do. You're so correct.
And right?
Amazing. You are correct.
I feel better now.
Oh, dopamine, dopamine, dopamine. Let's look at what social media also does. It facilitates the consumption of drugs in teens. Obviously, there's peer influence, friends, people that they look up to and respect, people that they want to receive likes from. Easy access to substances. Now they have an online candy store. Glamorization of drug use by popular online figures, including celebrities. Scrolling habits may inadvertently lead to normalization and trial of substances. So drugs, which may be part of what they're taught when they're kids by their parents as these things are bad, are now being promoted by peers, by celebrities, by lifestyles, by pages, by movies,
by
everywhere. Politics.
Yeah.
The politicians promote drugs.
Yeah. So.
Do they?
Yes.
In what way?
I see one guy say, oh, after the I take a day, I'd be more smart in the school. So,
oh. Okay. So. we'll leave that alone for a moment, but I get it. We think that there is a culture of promotion of drugs, whether it's therapy drugs. Oh, this drug actually helps you.
Yeah, you be more concentrated, you be more focused in the media, so we have more fun.
Yeah, focus that media. My ADHD drugs help me focus more on the media mm-hmm. to program me more to accept the ADHD drugs as being something that I should use to keep my behavior in check, which helps me focus more on the media, which convinces me to focus more on the media.
Pete. Okay.
Like. What else we have? Here's one. Children. Order medicine on Snapchat, then they are found dead. Headline, killed or permanently brain damaged children will have been found after taking prescription pills that dealers laced with fentanyl. By the way, this is the headline I put up there was one story, but then the bullet points are multiple. Killed were permanently brain damaged by ordering things online that look like medicine. They're packaged as medicine. They're made to look the color of the shape with the design on the medicine, and they're laced with fentanyl. Deadly pills ordered like pizza to your door in 30 minutes or it's free.
Wow.
Now that was, what was that, Little Caesar? Somebody did that. That, you know, deliver that pizza. Pills are openly marketed, connections made, and deals struck. The content is automatically deleted to hide the culprits from the authorities, especially when the people end up dead or brain damaged,
mm-hmm.
having to be cared for the rest of their lives. Fentanyl drugs are designed to look like prescription pills. That's what we just said.
Wow.
So they make it look like a pill. So you want to take a pill that gets you high, that's a prescription pill. You order it online, and it's laced with something else. And they said the amount of fentanyl that kills you is equivalent to 12 grains of sand. 12 grains of sand.
So it's so powerful.
It's very powerful. What else do we have on that? So we were talking a little bit about psychedelic mushrooms with psilocin or psilocybin and why teens use them. Exploration and curiosity. Interest in altered states of consciousness. Perceived natural origin. Well, they grow from the ground. They're safer compared to these synthetic drugs.
Yeah, poison ivy growing.
Poison ivy growing.
And it's really bad for me.
Make some tea out of that.
Yeah.
Peer influence. popular in certain social or festival settings. Let's all do mushrooms, yay. Mm-hmm. Or the movie we just saw, right? Yeah. And it's like, how can you make a movie promoting something that is so dangerous, and especially dangerous to children?
Mm-hmm.
There's studies that show that some of these things are therapeutic in nature to adults that are suffering from different challenges. But for children, it's universally accepted that it can change the brain and change the brain forever in a way that's non-recoverable.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what these drugs do is alter the synapses and the neuroplasticity of the brain during the action of taking it. But when you're in that growth period of your life as a child and your brain is really plastid or has a lot of neuroplasticity, the ability to change and grow, now you're changing and growing in a way that may involve hallucinations, they may involve other things, they may make connections, the brain may make connections in a way that it never was intended, and it can change you forever. In fact, you don't know it changed you because you are who you think you are, and as soon as you add this additional programming to your brain, it becomes you forever.
And it's difficult to treat, because how you treat somebody believe it's okay.
Exactly.
If you don't believe it's nothing, it's wrong.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you treat somebody who doesn't know they have an issue, or they believe it's just normal and natural? The point of some of these things is that if you read a book, you can choose to read the book and you can choose to stop as soon as you want. But if you take a pill and all of a sudden you don't want the hallucination, how do you stop?
Mm-hmm.
You can't control the changes that happen to you. I kind of believe, and I have to do more research, is that if it affects a child this way, it can affect an adult this way too. Maybe not as much because the neuroplasticity isn't as strong, but it's still there.
But also we have neuroplasticity because we learn every day, based upon that we have more than 50 years old. So.
Yeah, and we learn all this that we share with you as we go through it. And we choose what we're learning in this case, right? It doesn't get downloaded to us.
We believe that
overnight, somebody shares it with us and we wake up and it's in our brain. It's been in our dream and we're sharing it with you.
And you have a tea in the table night.
Where did this tea come from? Honey.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about some of the problems with the mushrooms, that they can create a persistent disruption of functional connectivity, actually desynchronizing and disrupting communication in your brain's default network and the hippocampus. The harm it can do is it impairs the ability to process space, time, and self-identity in developing teens. And these are studies done with the developing teens. Example, reduced hippocampal DMN, the default mode network, connectivity may increase risk of depression and anxiety, but that's okay because when you get older, you can use the mushrooms to treat it.
Sure.
Which is really interesting because there's some similarities with that in other drugs where if you have too much when you're younger and it affects your brain's brain. And remember, we were talking about, Alzheimer's and other type of things that may be caused by excessive drug use when you're younger. Well, the drugs used to treat it also when you're older. So it's kind of weird. Once you're on it, you need to take it again. Not saying this happens for everyone, but the point is, it's something that when it happens to you, you don't choose the result. You're not in control of the result, and you don't even know that you got the result. Other people see it in you, but you don't. Whereas a book like Excellence, or Right Now, or 90 Day Soulmate, or While Victoria Dreams, all those things are things you can choose to read or not read. You can choose to study, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we have such a big program for you today, and it's so impactful. So let's talk about the increased vulnerability to neuropsychiatric disorders, that sometimes the mushrooms can cause a decreased network segregation, which heightens the risk for maladaptive brain plasticity. As we said, the brain and its plasticity will be something that's not normal. Teens may face long-term risks for psychosis, PTSD, and anxiety disorders. Example, vulnerable individuals more likely to develop severe psychological issues post-psilocybin. So post taking the mushrooms, But it also talks about, some of the studies talk about, is that if your family has a history of different mental challenges, mental mm-hmm. disorders, psychosis, maybe schizophrenia, that mushrooms, even at an older age, can trigger these things. So it does, like, it can be good in some, it can be a treatment in some, and it can be a cause mm-hmm. in others.
In others, yes.
And so, again.
And you don't have a dosis for these ladies, okay? Let me take a piece like that in the water. No.
But, and then how do you treat it? Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, now what do you do? You've done something in your brain where you've created growth in your brain in a way that's not good and not positive. Yeah. And so that's going to be it in our talking about dangers of. But we wanted to talk about social media, how it gives children access to drugs. It can use influencers, people who are very well known, peers, their friends, can influence them into thinking that this is good and it's fun and it's normal, it's a party, you have a good time, and it can be very destructive. And in some of these cases, the different types of drugs can lead to death. I mean, I think in the U.S. there's like almost 100,000 deaths a year from drugs.
You know, nobody's safe.
Yeah, not including, you know, gang-related violence and all the other stuff, right, that's separate from. But, you know, there's a social contagion in social media. So today's show, we're going to talk about digital crack, how crack of the digital social media has dangers in our lives. And a lot of it uses evolutionary vulnerabilities as an entry into our brain and then for control. So our show will be introduction, which we've talked a little bit about. Then we'll get into evolutionary biology and the vulnerable brain. Part two is social media's impact on children. Part three is the society-wide consequences of digital addiction. And part four is fighting back against the digital contagion. In moments of gratitude, we notice the beauty in every detail, the smiles, the shining eyes, the teamwork, perseverance, and effort. These are the building blocks of the incredible mission Ayudaven supports. We've witnessed girls who joined the home as babies grow into confident professionals, certified in their passions and contributing to society in meaningful ways. Three inspiring stories from Ayudaven. Angela, who came to Muchos Manos at 3 months of age, she will graduate as a food and beverage manager with plans to open her own bakery. Maria, who joined Muchos Manos at the age of 9. Today she's in her second year of dentistry. And Mercedes, who came to the home at the age of 12. Now a dentist graduate, she works at one of Valencia, Venezuela's top dental centers. Make a donation today via Zelle at gym@ayudaven.org and celebrate the rhythm of hope, purpose, and unity that connects us all together.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to our Digital Crack Show. Now, there's some good information, so I asked my digital assistant mm-hmm. to find some information for us. We want to talk about countries that were limiting the amount of social media that children could ingest, mm-hmm. what they could eat each day. So, for instance, in France, they have a voluntary program in schools for children between the ages of 11 and 15. They used to just have to turn their phones off at the beginning of the day, but they've now allowed some students to take part in a trial program where at the beginning of the day, they actually hand their phone in and they get it back at the end of the day. So that's in French, or should I say in France. In Australia, they're limiting social media to children over the age of 14, that they're not going to allow kids, they're limiting for kids between 14 and 16, meaning you're younger than that, no social media. And what was the other one? Finland, there's a town in Finland that has decided to no longer hand out computers to their children in the school system, but in what are they doing? They're going to give them books, actual books.
Something like that.
Yeah, books and papers and notes, because of the influence and the distraction and the addiction to wanting to go to these other things within the computer. So that, I thought, was very interesting. How social media exploits human evolutionary weaknesses. Do you know that 72% of adults use social media? It's reshaping human interaction habits. So it used to be 100% of interactions were human to human.
Mm-hmm.
Now 72% of humans use social media for a portion of their social interactions. I'm assuming some of them use them for almost all of their social interactions. That's tough. What else do we have here? As a slide two, social media, a global contagion. So driven by evolutionary psychology, it's exploiting human vulnerabilities. Example, viral challenges lead 30% of teens to take unnecessary risks. Like a viral challenge is eat this cinnamon, try to eat the teaspoon of cinnamon, eat this hot pepper, this ghost pepper, record yourself doing this, that they have teens, you know, step by a cliff and take a picture of yourself. Challenge. And then you challenge your friend and challenge your friends. Well, now 30% of kids are taking unnecessary risks. The evolution of social interaction. So in the past, we used to be hunter-gatherers who gossiped to global platforms. Actually, sorry. We used to be hunter-gatherers who gossiped to each other, but now we're on global platforms talking about nothing. We shift from survival to amusement. So in the past, in a hunter-gatherer society, we would get together socially and share information like where we went fishing, where the best berries are, where to avoid the big bear in the woods. So you don't step in something, you know, that you would share stuff for survival. Now we're sharing stuff for amusement, but our amusement might be making people angry. It might be trolling people. It might be arguing with people, or it might be finding something funny, and it has nothing to do with survival. Right?
Or put the life more at risk by the challenge.
Right. So it's putting you more at risk and more likely to be depressed. So it's the opposite of survival. We think it's amusement, but it's actually causing depression and risk-taking behavior. And finally, there is dopamine released from likes. It's comparable to small gambling wins. So when you get likes on the social media platform, you're like, yeah, somebody watched my video. Yeah. Someone liked it. Yeah.
I'm dancing.
Absolutely. But these are things that have taken over. It forms, the dopamine release is the same thing an addictive drug does, a gambling win does. It's an addictive, predictive, addictive behavioral, stimulus. So it stimulates addictive behavior. Understanding addiction. Dopamine-driven digital loops. So dopamine drives us to go to the social media to get the like, to get the dopamine, to go back more for more and more. It hijacks the brain's reward system. Example, average users spend 2+ hours daily in scrolling loops. Just keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling.
No.
Looking for stuff to be fun, looking for stuff to share, seeing if people are liking what they've posted.
Mm-hmm.
Our objectives today is to raise awareness, understand the impacts, and for instance, 92% of teens say social media shapes their opinions on global issues. 92% social media, not even verified social media, just general social media.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever they like best, who's presenting best in the group that they joined because the group has their views. So they join a group that has their own views already. That group gives them more evidence, information.
Like the Reddit, you know, is the other website.
Oh, Reddit. You just join a group that supports your own view and you become more knowledgeable in your own view, that you're not seeking alternatives. Evolutionary biology and the vulnerable brain. Let's look at that. Hunter-gatherer networks. We used to share food. Now we share information. The evolutionary importance of networks. Being connected to people is very important for us from a standpoint of being a human. Example. We now share memes, which builds social bonds, but reduces nuanced discussions. You don't get to see somebody's body language. You can't be too personal. You're sharing a meme. It's a very, what is it? Very superficial. Mm-hmm. Superficial memes. Gossip. Social assessment in hunter-gatherers. As you're talking to others and they gossip to you, you can kind of assess who they are, what they are they helpful, are they not helpful? Modern gossip would be cat videos. Yeah, look at that. That was so much fun. 75% of online gossip involves discussion about public figures. Things that aren't even important.
And you spend hours and hours.
The movie star, the action hero, the recording artist, the politician. Things that actually don't have to do with your daily survival.
Mm-hmm.
But get us in plenty of arguments. I'll tell you a minute about that, huh? Dopamine addiction. The pleasure pathways are exploited, as we talked about before. Social media is a drug. Example, dopamine receptors are overstimulated by repeated like notifications. Again, likes, likes, likes. They knew, the social media platforms knew what they were doing when they added that like button. In fact,
it's not just like, it's also if you stay more time.
Reading
something or see something, the same topic show more the other that you pass fast. So just the scroll slow or fast, the algorithm. No?
That's something we're going to talk about, the algorithms. Yeah. The algorithms that compete with each other to get you to spend more time on their platform, mm-hmm. right? And the way they do that is the one that can give you the most dopamine, the one addicts you the most, you go back to,
mm-hmm.
right? So how about tribal signals in social media? You have in-group and out-group dynamics. So we'll talk about that. Social media amplifies tribal instincts, and 80% of group hashtags align with identity-driven social behaviors. You seek out those who think like you. Birds of a feather flock together. Birds don't go out and go, hey, should I hang out with the cat or should I hang out with a walrus? Should I learn something from them? Nah, I don't want to listen to them. I'm going to just listen to my flock.
But the language, so it's the same language.
It's the same language. That's why they call it the murder of crows. A group of crows is called a murder of crows.
Okay.
Because birds of feather flock together and they kill all of us. Maybe that should have been the title for today's show.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we have here? We have dangerous appeal of in-group and out-group dynamics. It promotes belonging by also fueling conflicts. Again, how do you get an in-group, out-group dynamic which creates a dopamine addiction? Well, you mimic ancient tribal rivalry. Again, in-group versus out-group. In-group, you can say how great we are, and that leads you to a certain amount of feeling like you belong. But by pointing out how different someone else is and how wrong they are and how you all, quote, hate them or dislike them or their music is awful or they're a horrible actor or actress or as a politician they should be in jail. All that stuff is like, oh, my group is so good.
Yeah.
And all groups are all the same and they think they're... They build their own self-esteem this way. Trending topics often highlight divisive societal norms. And those are the trending topics that you see scrolling through your social media feed. It's junk food for the mind. Overstimulation in digital foraging. So as you go through the forest looking for those berries now being... the topics that you want to hear about, the videos you want to see, it overly stimulates as you forage for these foods, these brain-feeding, dopamine-releasing foods. It reduces your focus and emotional depth. Digital distractions decrease productivity by up to 40%.
Wow.
So people are spending 40% of their time moving off what they're supposed to be working on. And go into their meme or their last chat because they're addicted to it.
Yeah.
And this is why that school was trying to take the computer in Finland was taking the computers out of the classroom. Give books.
Yeah. No. So the I hear some statistics how much time you touch the phone.
Mm.
Just open to check in anything. So if anything is okay. So just no search. Just checking the phone is 1,000 per day. I don't remember the number.
So is there a challenge then, say we thought as a society it would actually be good for all of us just to get rid of phones. Do you think there's such a corporate capitalistic need for us to have the phone, meaning there's so much money being made by these phones because they're reading what we're thinking, they're predicting what we're thinking, they're keeping us keeping our attention in order to market us things, in order to push us in a certain direction, in order to track us and know us, that there's too much invested in this for society to even have a voice about we need to get rid of these. We need just phones that you can call people on. That's it. And hard copy books. Walk around with your books.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing about being distracted. If you have a book, oh, I can flip to a different chapter. But you're still in the book. You haven't gone to a whole different thing like basket weaving or cat music. Trolling. Trolling, anonymity, and antisocial behaviors online. There's a rise of antisocial behaviors because you are anonymous a lot of times. The lack of accountability encourages aggression. Example, anonymous accounts post 65% of controversial online content. Not only that, but I was watching this thing today, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I have to do more research. It was showing how, I think this was China or Russia, they were taking all these cell phones and creating these individual connections to a giant computer, and the computer had thousands of individual Instagram accounts or YouTube accounts, and they would post trolling comments and either do it for pay or do it because the government was sponsoring them.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that they are creating thought. And they're creating mind viruses through content.
Yeah.
They're making us be angry with each other. You were just talking about algorithmic exploitation. Platforms compete for attention. Users' behavior fuels addiction. For instance, algorithmic targeting increases click-through rates by 25%. I have to believe it's much more than that. You know,
algorithm on one of it, we know that.
They don't. Yeah. The AI didn't want me to know. Yeah, the articles.
They reduced this percent.
No, it can't be 99.9%. Yeah. Make it 25%. We don't want them to know. Dopamine loops, we talked about, parallels with substance abuse. So the dopamine loops that we get from digital foraging are equivalent to substance abuse and gambling addiction and other addictions. Reward mechanisms are reinforced. An example, the reward loops mirror slot machine addiction mechanisms. So when they see how the brain reacts to social media and to people addicted to gambling and how they use slot machines and go, oh, it's the same. So when you say, I don't have a gambling addiction, I'm on my phone 4 hours a day, it's the same thing.
It's the same.
And we give our kids these things, right? And here you go, take a look. And we don't know the damage we've done.
Maybe we are damaged already, too.
Yeah, we're damaged. A little less damaged. Maybe more damaged. Who knows? Technology is a double-edged sword. Tools, it can be a tool, but it can also be a threat and let threats into our life. The benefits and risks of digital engagement. Well, we got some benefits because we can get information and focus information and detail information and research. But at the same time, we can be distracted and we can be in an in-group versus an out-group. We can create and foster arguments. 35% of people report tech use causing significant relationship strain. Oh my gosh. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about digital crack. Social media. In moments of gratitude, we notice the beauty in every detail, the smiles, the shining eyes, the teamwork, perseverance, and effort. These are the building blocks of the incredible mission AyutaVen supports. Three inspiring stories from AyutaVen. Angela, who came to Muchos Manos at 3 months of age, she will graduate as a food and beverage manager with plans to open her own bakery. Maria, who joined Muchos Manos at the age of 9. Today she's in her second year of dentistry. And Mercedes, who came to the home at the age of 12. Now a dentist graduate, she works at one of Valencia, Venezuela's top dental centers. Make a donation today via Zelle at jim@audevend.org and celebrate the rhythm of hope, purpose, and unity that connects us all together.
Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about digital crack, social media, and its destruction on evolution. It's also leveraging evolution, right? It's leveraging our brains and the knowledge of how to control us through algorithms.
Yeah.
And plus, we have this addiction. I think what happened was technology has advanced so much for us to actually understand its impact, that it's beyond our understanding, and it was released to the world. Just kind of like how people are worried about AI. AI is something, but AI without the social media and the aspects of the internet that we have today probably, you know, is a secondary thing. We're worried about AI, but we're not worried about the actual intelligence out there or lack of intelligence out there.
Yeah.
And all the algorithms that were already there, those might not have been artificial intelligence. That might have been intelligent intelligence, like real intelligence, promoting us to be focused in certain ways to control us. Now, when it's not the corporations doing and not the governments doing and not troll farms doing it, but it's some, artificial intelligence doing it, we get worried. Mm. We should have been worried all along. That's where I am. Social media's impact on children's. These are slides 16 through 25. Let's go right into it. Why are children at most risk? The impacts on emotional development are there at an early age. Example, 60% of toddlers have interacted with smartphones by age two. By age two. And we were talking about neuroplasticity in teenagers when they were dealing with drugs and social media. Now we're talking about where you've got two times, 200% of the brain growth happening in rapid transformation. And a two-year-old's using a phone. They might not know what they're seeing. They don't know what they're seeing.
Yeah.
And they don't know what they're seeing. Meaning they're seeing stuff that is getting programmed into them that they don't actually know what it is, but they may get addicted to the use of the phone, the rapid response of games. And that may be, you know, hey, let's create a game that makes a kid want to play it. Well, there goes your dopamine, being released. What else do we have here? Reduce social interaction. Real life interactions decline. So digital interactions replace in-person conversations for 50% of teens. Hmm. 50% of them don't have regular interactions. They just...
Texting each other, not all you. Yeah. You cannot call right now spontaneous. You have to text it first. You can receive a call.
Can I call you now?
Yeah.
You text a message. Call me when you have a moment.
Yeah,
actually, that's something I noticed at work, too, which is a lot of times in the old people, we just call somebody like, hey, did you get the proposal? Hey, what's going on? Are you going to be showing up? And we ask like one of the younger generation, hey, can you find out when that thing's going to be delivered? And then like later in the day, you say, hey, what did you find out? And they said, well, I sent them the email. I haven't gotten a response yet. It's like, why don't you call them? Oh, no, I don't want to bother them. It's like they're they don't want that instant communication.
No.
They want to control.
It's scary. Come on.
What else do we have? Cyberbullying, epidemic, mental health impacts. We have those problems. Increased online harassment. 59% of high school and middle school aged children have claimed that they've been impacted by cyberbullies. What else? Negative self-perception. Oh. You like this? Idealized personas online. Low self-esteem in children. That they see these idealized personas online and they have low self-esteem. So they create an idealized persona of themselves. And that goes back to what you were telling me before.
Mm-hmm.
There's some countries or some place, I don't know if it's a country or a city or a town, but they made it what?
They not allowed to children use a filter for the face because they start to absorb the not real image. So they always want to see different beauty, you know, makeup, the eyes, good hair. In the real life, they don't are like that. They, when seeing the normal mirror, feel depression and feel sad. So they discovered the damage, the brain of the kid.
So they only feel good when they're their fake self, when they're the fake image.
Yeah.
Terrible. So 42% of teens curate online profiles to avoid criticism. So they don't post things because they don't want to get somebody to complain about what they posted. They want to look good because they don't want to say somebody, hey, did you gain weight? They don't want someone to say that to them. They curate profiles so they don't get negative feedback. Cognitive impairments, disrupted attention spans, because they can get instant information and they can get it quick. When you sit down for a 30-minute lecture in a class, they can't pay attention. They got to grab their phone because that dopamine's calling. You know, I'm missing it. I need it. I need my fix.
I see it. Almost years ago when we went to the gym, they see people use the iPad, put a book and the video of the TV and go in the treadmill to run. So I say, okay, well, you watch the movies, or you reading the book or magazine, or you listening to music, what are you doing?
Or you running.
Or you running.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so when I see this picture, I say, wow. So it's a lot of stimulation and just one activity.
One activity. And that's maybe how the whole life is, that I need this constant stimulation. It's hard to be by myself.
Yeah.
And I find that's true too. So sometimes I'll play guitar or maybe the piano, but then other times I'm just like, oh, why am I doing this?
I use listen video when I cook. Yeah. So they say, why no listen music versus video? You know?
You listen to video while you cook, while you're on the treadmill.
Both, yeah.
All at the same time.
No, difficult, but yeah, just thinking about that.
Well, at nighttime, the screens disrupt sleep, the blue lights affect health, and late night scrolling increases insomnia rates by 50%. How many times have you heard kids, oh, I didn't get any sleep last night. I was up till 4 a.m. And it wasn't that they just couldn't get sleep. There was probably a phone on or a computer on or an iPad on.
The blue light.
The blue light. Blue light special. It's no longer a special. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what a blue light special is?
No.
That used to be, I believe, like at stores, they'd have a blue light special where they'd have a low price on something underneath the blue light. It's from years ago, probably when green stamps were around, too.
Black and white.
Everything was black and white back then.
How you see the blue.
Parents have a challenge monitoring and managing screen time, creating balance in the child's life, and only 40% of parents actively use parental control apps. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a video of somebody taking away their phone from their child? Or like the game, iPad. iPad or something, the kid just has a meltdown.
Yeah. And the father, I love when the father put in the pool, I guess.
In the pool.
He swimming and.
Or the blender.
When I kill the father.
And it really destroys them. They're so connected that you think that's an overreaction. And it is an overreaction, but it's a real reaction because you're breaking part of their brain. You're that dopamine craving part of their brain that was so connected is now being, you know, it's being short circuited. Very terrible. Social media usage in children. Here you go. 60% of children spend 3 hours or more daily. It's linked to anxiety and depression. 68% of children with high screen time experience anxiety disorders. 68%. Over two-thirds of the children online with high screen times have anxiety and disorders. 60% of children spend more than 3 hours online. So if you take 60%, spend more than that amount of time, and two-thirds of those, that means 40% of children have anxiety disorders due to social media, due to electronic access. 40%. That's huge.
It's huge, yeah.
Huge, huge, huge.
But we have the pharmaceutical sell a lot of pills.
Oh, the doctors, the pharmacies, and that's we won't get into we won't get into the medical field right now or pharmaceutical companies at this point. Addiction is a family crisis. Parents and children are both affected. There needs to be an intervention, but most families won't do it. Families spending offline time report better emotional connections. Go into the woods where there's no signal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hang out and go camping. Do something where, like,
and
you have fun.
And leave the kids there.
Leave the kids there.
Oh, I forget the kids.
Much better connection at that point.
Oh, sorry.
Solutions for protecting children's minds, education, and awareness. Limit screen time proactively. 75% of parents express concern about their children's tech usage. So 75% have fears about how much time, but not that many are actually doing anything about it. So
it's scary.
We need the government to do something about it. Nah. But I think if you say the government is us, like we elect our government officials, and if there's a big enough push to, we really got to do something about this. Is this really a problem? This is like more of a problem than most of the things people are arguing about on TV today. They argue about stupid things that affect this group or that group or this group. And it's like, this affects all of us that are becoming these groups when we get older. These things affect kids. These kids will become us when they get older. And then they'll have all these other problems we have on top of the problems that we're creating for them. Okay, I think I've just found my new political platform. It's going to be called the Power Off Party.
Mm-hmm.
Pop. Power Off Party.
Pop.
Pop. We're all going to be old people. Pops. Whatever. So society-wide consequences of addiction. Let's go through a couple of these. We have the digital arms race, right? Platforms versus cognition. Will we think or will the platform think for us? The erosion of attention spans. Example, the platforms optimize user retention at the cost of mental health. The platform that is trying to keep you watching it and turning and flipping and clicking likes is trying to keep you away from thinking. That's how they make up money. They make money by damaging your ability to think for yourself.
It's control.
It is.
I control the society. You are powerful.
And for most people, I understand that makes sense, right? But not for me. But not, what was that? For thee, but not for me? Is that how it works? Oh. Let's see. How internet culture alters reality perception. It distorts perceptions. Distorts perceptions. Not only distorts them, but it distorts them. Creates polarized echo chambers where you are talking to people who are just like yourself and arguing with those who are not like you. The in-group, the out-group. 65% of users cannot distinguish between factual and misleading posts. I'm going to say that 90% can't distinguish between trolls and actual people who are really having a disagreement with them.
Hmm.
There are people out there who just purpose, when I say people, they say that AI can actually control trolls. They can be set up to have just whatever the argument is, have an argument with the person and create conversation on something to have more attention to that thing to get more comments. Right?
More traffic.
So more traffic. How do you do more traffic? Have more arguments because people are looking for arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. Troll farms. Misinformation is used as a weapon. It impacts on society on purpose. Some foreign governments want to disrupt other governments, want to disrupt the people of the governments. Example, troll farms promote divisive narratives to 30% of users globally. It's out there. It's always there. You know?
Yeah.
So it's not good. Social media's role in political polarization. It amplifies division, creates echo chambers. Again, we said that. Political divides on social media increased 45% in the last decade. Well, obviously, because social media use is getting more and more and more prevalent. There's so much we can talk about this subject.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to leave it here, is that it is a social contagion. It is a digital crack that social media, the internet, smartphones, it wants us to involve ourselves in it. It's replacing human-to-human contact. It's replacing what has helped us as a species survive for millions of years, right? The tribe, the getting together in the town square and helping each other out. Where's the best hunting grounds? Where's the best spot to fish? Where can I get fresh fruit and vegetables from? Where I should avoid because it's dangerous? Those things, those communications of a community get pushed aside for arguments and fake stuff on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with that, we hope you can have a good week now as we've brightened your day with the positive aspects of trying to stop the social crack, the digital crack of social media. Have yourselves a great week. Thanks for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim. See you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.